We're talking today with Roy Lee Lindsey of Oklahoma Pork. And Roy Lee, let's talk about the effort that Oklahoma has been a part of over the last few days, several states participating in an exercise looking at what if we did have a case of African swine fever make it into the United States. So what was going on this week, and why the need for this type of an exercise?
Well, this was a multi-state exercise. I think there were 14 states and the USDA participating together with the idea that we started on Monday with, hey, we've got a suspect case of ASF in either in your state or somewhere in the country, and the folks at USDA that were running the exercise would push out injects or push out, this is what's happening, now how do you respond? And so we got an alert that, and again, this was an exercise here, but we got an alert that said, hey, we have a suspect case in Oklahoma. How are you going to respond to that? What do you do? And we actually had chosen a farm, if you will, and we sent foreign animal disease diagnostician from the Department of Ag out, and they went through the process of how would we collect samples here? What would we do with those samples? How would we get them from here to the testing lab, whether that was in Amarillo or Stillwater, and ultimately on to Plum Island for testing, if you will. But how do we go through that process? What does that look like? Not just talk about it around the table, but actually go through, here's the animals, here's what we've got to do, here's what I have to ship, here's the foreign animal disease guy on site, what does that look like, where do we go? On Tuesday, they came back, and really the days weren't connected, but they were similar, if you will. So Tuesday we kind of started again, and we got notice early in the day that, hey, there's another state that has a positive case of, again, as part of this exercise, of got another state that had a positive, and what's your response in Oklahoma? USDA says we're requesting a national standstill of animals. Dr. Hall goes through and says, I want to issue a national stop movement order, or a statewide stop movement order, 72 hours. It goes into effect at this time. It will expire at that time. How do you put all that together? And one of the key components here was we went through this as close to practical or functional as you can. So the Department of Ag, you've got Dr. Hall and his team over in one room, and then they activated the incident management team from within the department. Primarily they're used for fires. They fight forest fires and wildfires. But the same concept in terms of managing incidents applies whether we're fighting foreign animal disease or we're fighting a wildfire. And so put that management team together. That's the group that's going to do logistics. You know, if you've got to go fight a foreign animal disease, you got to have food, you got to have water, you got to have people, you got to have a place for them to stay, you got to have all these things, you got to have equipment, whatever it may be. So somebody's got to take care of ordering all that so that not everybody's on top of one another. You got to have a public information officer who's pushing out information to the public, to industry, taking input from the public, from industry, and getting it back into the team. You've got to have somebody doing finance. How do you pay for all that? You've got to have a planning officer for what do we got to have for planning operations. How many people do I have to have? Okay, logistics, I need this many people. You go find me this many people. And a safety officer, make sure all the things we're doing are to protect people and animals and all of that as we go. And we've talked about that. We've always said, well, we're going to spin up this incident management team, but we had never gone to that measure. And so we had an incident commander, we had a public information officer, and Tuesday, as we were talking to the department, they said, you know, we asked the question, would it be helpful for us as the Pork Council to be in the command center? And the answer was overwhelmingly yes. How quickly can you be here? And so I went over Tuesday morning and spent the rest of the day Tuesday and all day Wednesday and about half a day yesterday going through as part of this exercise. Dr. Hall and his team would get an inject, or they would get a new addition to the scenario, and then we had messages to craft, whatever those are, come back to the incident management team. This is what we've got to do. The incident management team has to figure out how to do those things in consultation with industry, in consultation with Dr. Hall, and put all that together. So lots of moving parts, lots of moving pieces, but it was far more practical an exercise than the other tabletop discussions really we've been doing. They call them exercises previously, but really what we did was we sat around a room and we said, okay, what if,
right.
And then you just talked about it. You didn't really have to make a decision. The answer was, well, I think I might. In this case, you had to make a decision, and that decision drove your next actions, which prompted responses, prompted feedback, and you really learned from what those pieces were.
So with all that said, what did we learn?
Well, we learned a number of things. One is I have a much greater appreciation for the value that those incident management teams provide in responding to a crisis. Their experience, their expertise in managing crises is going to be invaluable should we ever need them. They may not know anything about foreign animal disease, but they know how to put people together. They know how to put teams together. They know how to manage the resources and marshal the resources you need. And if you're trying to stamp out an ASF break or a foreign animal disease outbreak, mm-hmm. we're going to need people who know how to manage the crisis and the logistics and the public information side of that, because we're going to be overwhelmed trying to take care of animals, trying to take care of our people. We need that expertise. So that, to me, was tremendous in terms of what we learned there. We identified things that we had talked through previously. We had talked about, okay, well, we're going to collect samples, and we'll have to do sampling before we can resume movements after a stop movement order. But we didn't really ever talk about how we would collect those samples. We didn't talk about how they would be packaged. We didn't talk about how we're going to transport them from place to place. Who's going to transport them? In this scenario, we put all that together, and we identified real quick that some of the materials we had that we put together and sent out were incomplete. That, hey, I sent them a map that says this is where the affected premise is, and here's the circles around it. That's the buffer zone and the control zone, but we didn't label the map. So I sent the map out and immediately got a response from one of our vets saying, I don't know what the circles mean. Okay. Well, now I know that when the map goes out, it's got to have a legend on it that explains. And there were things that, because I was watching them develop the map and had been looking at it all day, I knew what they were. Never dawned on me that somebody outside that room didn't know what those pieces were.
Right.
And so those, to me, are the things that you only see when you actually go through the exercise of pushing information out like it was real time. The other thing that we learned as the Oklahoma Pork Council, we've put together our own crisis communication plan that involves text message alerts out to our members, our producers, and you can opt to get into that system if you're a hog producer in the state. You want to get those alerts, we can add you to that system. We have an email system that allows us to push messaging out. If you've opted in and given us your email address, we can push that information out to you. And so for the first time since we've put our plan together, we actually got to do it. And not just, okay, well, we're going to test this tomorrow. We tested it in real time, and we pushed out multiple messages over multiple days with the idea of, okay, Roy Lee's over here at the Department of Ag having input into what the messaging is that the PIO and everybody else is pushing out. So the rest of my team is over here at the office or at home or wherever they happen to be, trying to take that messaging and putting it into a form to send to our members so that we're still communicating directly back out to the industry. Great opportunity for us to test that out, let our members see how it's going to work, and we've received real positive feedback for that. So I'm really proud that, number one, we were prepared, but we also identified some places of things that just didn't work as well for us. We were having to decide each day who was responsible for doing what. Sorry, with that, we've got to decide internally that I got this staff person assigned to the email and this one to the text message and this one to communicating with me and or whatever that looks like. We got to get that done in advance, knowing we want to duplicate and cover for one another, but right. That's a decision we shouldn't be making in the middle of what's going on. We should have made that ahead of time.
Right. From, you know, a biosecurity point of view, as far as the, you know, this disease in particular, I know it's a scary disease based on how we've seen it spread through multiple countries and really continents as well. What are your fears as far as or concerns as you thought about this all week long? That it, you know, theoretically it might be there.
Well, when we think about we've been blessed. I think that we've never had a case of African swine fever here in North America, and I think that's positive. Certainly we've never had one in the United States. We haven't had classical swine fever, I think, since the 50s here in the United States. We haven't had foot and mouth disease since maybe the 20s even. And a lot of that speaks to the fact that we're somewhat isolated from the rest of the world. I mean, we're a big country, but we're somewhat isolated. But as you add global travel, as you add people moving back and forth from country to country, place to place, with no real knowledge of how diseases are transmitted. And I'm not talking about people doing this maliciously. I'm just talking about you just as a I didn't know any better. You've traveled abroad extensively. You know what it is when you come back from visiting farms and you're hoping the guy at the Customs and Border Patrol gate says, "Hey, Ron, have you been on a farm?" And you say, "Yes, I've been on a farm." And he says, "Okay, go talk to this guy." That's what's supposed to happen when you come back into the country. If that's not happening, then we need to notify CBP and say, "Hey, Customs and Border Protection, we need you to be more vigilant on these issues." I think that it's certainly as possible for, in an unintended fashion, for someone to bring African swine fever into this country. And that's why these exercises are so critical for our ability to respond to that. The sooner we can isolate a farm, the sooner we can isolate an outbreak, the sooner we can stamp out that outbreak, then the sooner we can get back to business as usual. Because the day we get an outbreak, the markets are going to close. We're going to lose our export markets. And in the pork industry, we're exporting 26, 27% of our product today. We could be exporting. We need to be in the 30-plus percent range. We're trying to grow exports every day. Okay, that's a great tool as long as you're able to maintain those markets and keep them open. Foreign animal disease could immediately impact access to those foreign markets. So that's what's valuable to us. That's what concerns me is, are we doing everything we can on farm? Most of my guys that are buying feed supplies today are quarantining the micronutrients and the minerals, and they're setting them aside, and we're going to hold them 60 days or 80 days or something after they've come over on a boat so that we're doing what we can to protect feedstuffs as a vector. I think we're doing that everywhere we can. I think we're monitoring herd health probably better than we've ever monitored herd health. And so I think we're doing what we can do, controlling what we can control. And this planning is just how do you prepare for the things you can't control.
In end of the day, if we got that case, what would it mean to the Oklahoma hog industry?
Well, the economic impacts would be astronomical. Again, if you suddenly lose 27% of the demand for your product, what are we going to do with all that product? Where is it going to go on the market? The value of animals would be next to nothing. But in addition to that, if it's on your farm, the emotional toll of it on your farm, our folks start every day with the idea of producing safe, healthy food, and that means safe, healthy animals, okay? And so if you've done everything in your power to raise healthy animals, to see them sick, to see them dealing with disease, to know what you have to do to respond to that is emotionally trying beyond words. And so the impacts are not just economics, but they're emotional. I think that long-term would cause tremendous disruption within the pork industry as a whole. Everything from industry structure to who owns pigs to who doesn't and who has the resources to survive and who doesn't have the resources to survive. And a lot of that depends on how quickly we can control the disease and how quickly we can get it eradicated and demonstrate that we are negative for the disease moving forward. And again, that's why we practice, that's what these exercises are for, is to help us do that in as timely a fashion as possible.